It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Bill Monroe is in the studio.
How you doing?
Which is always fun. You never know if Bill's going to be on Skype or in the studio.
And it's a big, mysterious adventure every time.
It is.
You never know what you're going to get.
I don't know what we're going to get because we have topics, and I don't know how we're going to get to them. And Allison Clark is in the studio for the second time. She has refused a microphone, but she will lean in if we make her angry.
That's a good way.
Is that a challenge?
Challenge accepted.
and we're going to talk about the kind of topic I love to talk about, which is people getting angry over something that's not meant to get anyone angry.
Yeah.
And so what we're talking about is the new iPhone launch, which includes the iPhone, the smartwatch, and the U2 album. Which
I already have questions.
Yeah, I don't know. People are very angry about a U2 album.
No, not what's a smartwatch?
You didn't see that.
I don't watch all this shit.
They're doing a iPhone watch.
All right. My question about that is they made the watches relevant when they gave us cell phones that had watches built in.
But now you don't have to reach in your pocket and get it.
that's wasn't the whole point of the watch and the phone to be like, hey, now you don't have to put a watch on in the morning. It's in your pocket on your phone.
Yeah, but now you don't have to reach in your pocket, pull out your phone, and look at it, because it's on your wrist.
Where it was originally for over 100 years.
Yes.
Okay, just checking. All right, very good.
Again, I have no interest in the watch at all.
What else does it do besides being a watch?
Well, it gets you, you can have your email, and you can have text on it, and you can answer calls with it.
Oh, so it's
it.
Like the Dick Tracy thing?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, now you like it?
Well, yeah, because I can relate it to something I think is awesome. You can fight crime with it, John. Jesus.
That's true.
What more do you want it to do?
If we're all fighting crime, will there be crime?
Well, yeah.
Somebody's going to use it for crime.
Somebody will use it for crime. There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
And then, of course, the new phone is bigger. We need to say, Bill, since the last time you were here, Bill, you have now joined Microsoft.
Exactly.
So you're a direct competitor.
Well, we're both at Microsoft. We are both a competitor of the iPhone and a software developer for the iPhone and a cloud service provider to iPhone users.
Pretty wild.
So we sort of hit it on both sides. But just to be clear, in this context, I am not speaking in my capacity as a Microsoft employee or repping in that. So opinions of my own, et cetera, et cetera.
Got to
let's make sure the attorneys are happy.
There you go.
We're lucky Steven's talking in his own capacity.
I stand by every single thing I've ever said in my life.
people come into the store that you own and argue with you about it, and you're like, yes!
Yeah, and I'm usually right, because I can't be wrong. It's my store.
It's your store, your podcast.
Right? How could I be wrong?
The only one who can tell you you're wrong on the podcast is me.
Right, and that's just, I do. That's just like your opinion, man. So I have questions.
Yeah.
You work with the cloud?
I work with the cloud.
How do you guys, are you guys getting like slapped on the nose with a newspaper for the leaked photos of the nudie celebrities?
That wasn't Microsoft, that was Apple.
Oh, damn, Apple, you fucked up.
See, this is the way you do an NDA.
Right? There you go. He handled that so smoothly, too. He's like, that wasn't me. That was the competitor.
So, Bill, you have never owned an iPhone, right?
I have never owned an iPhone. I have owned an Android phone, and even before I was with Microsoft, I've owned a Windows phone, and I like both those platforms. My mother's on an iPhone, and I still like my iPod Classic. So I'm still rocking.
They don't make them anymore.
I know. I'm thinking about it. I need to find another 160 gig iPod Classic just to have in storage in case mine dies on me, because I just want to have all of my stuff with me. And it's
at all times.
And yes.
That's the one thing that interests me about the iPhone 6. I'll probably get it because I have a 4 and it's getting very beat up. It's getting really battered and the speakerphone doesn't quite work right. But the iPhone 6 interests me because it goes up to 128 gigs. I don't trust the cloud. I don't like the cloud. The cloud is like this big bank where you go, hey, just give us everything you got, and then we'll let you know when you can have it. And it's like, well, I need my stuff. I'm sorry, man. You're in a tunnel.
Well, you know, I think when we start talking about data and data backup, the most important thing with any of your data, whether it's stuff you want to consume on a regular basis or stuff you just want to store, is you always have to have, and other technologists will talk about this, you always need to have three copies of your data. You need to have a copy on your local machine. You need to have another copy nearby, another backup, maybe external hard drive,
right.
And you need to have offsite backup. You need to have it stored someplace else in case, you know, your home burns down. Having your backup on a hard drive next to your computer doesn't do you a whole lot of good. You know, having it only backed up online doesn't do you a whole lot of good if you know, forget all your passwords or the backup cloud provider shuts down. So you just always got to have all of that in multiple places.
Right. Sounds exhausting.
You know, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I have another question. I'm sorry. I don't know anything about iPhones. iPods, they still make those?
They stopped making the original one. Allison started waving at me when I said they stopped making iPods. But they made...
They still make the classic.
What did they stop making? They stopped making something.
I think that with this latest announcement, they just stopped making the classic. So they were making the classic up until like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think they're still continuing to make the iPod Touch, which is basically the iPhone without a phone.
All right. Now, the iPod holds a bunch of music, and the iPhone is a telephone. Why not just combine those into one device?
That's basically what the iPhone did, and that's why I wanted one initially. I was like, ooh, because I had a flip phone in one pocket, and I had my iPod in the other pocket.
Yeah.
I worked in the city, and I'm running around, so, like, I'm trying not to have a bag, or I don't throw anything in the other car seat. So when that first came out, I was like, oh, this is great. Then I can have all my music in my phone. And for the most part, that's still the most compelling thing about it.
Yeah.
The fact that this new phone goes to 128 gigs, which means I can go from having, like, 50 bands complete in my phone to, like, 150 bands in my phone. Yeah, and you know, I am, as we've said many times on this show, I am the most completist in my collection. So yeah, I want the bad Rolling Stones albums in my phone.
Right.
I don't know when I want to listen to Harlem Shuffle.
Yeah.
But I might be on a highway when that happens.
You know, I was listening to stuff on the iPod on the plane out here or up here this way when, you know, a Fat Boys track came on. And that just made me smile from a band from like 1982. Awesome.
Yeah, because you're not going to leave the house and go, I got my Fat Boys in my phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You'll never plan to bring this along with you.
Yeah.
But you see, that's the thing. There are a couple of reasons why there's an advantage to having them separate. One is cost. Because the phones are typically made with storage that's called solid state. That means there are no moving parts in it.
Okay. There's no spinning hard drive.
There's no spinning hard drive.
Okay.
Whereas the iPod Classic, which was the biggest one, actually had a spinning disc in there, which,
you
know, for the longest time, yeah, exactly, which the longest time was cheaper to make and you could put more space on it.
Yeah.
With the solid state, it's a much more expensive technology and you can put much less stuff on there. So if you only had like 20 CDs and you wanted them with you all the time on the phone, you could do that.
Yeah.
But if you had hundreds of CDs and you wanted to have thousands of songs with you all the time, you really needed much more space on the device. And that, for the longest time, meant you had to go with the spinning drive technology.
Right, which is vulnerable because I've killed a couple of iPods.
It's moving parts. So.
It's moving parts, exactly.
A spinning hard drive is literally like a record player. Like, the hard drive is spinning and there's a needle which is reading the data. So if you drop it at the wrong moment and it scratches the disc, the same way you scratch a record, it's useless. And there's been a few iPods that I dropped at the wrong time, and that was the end of it.
Right.
I had an external hard drive, like, drop that had a spinning hard drive.
Well, especially with an external. Externals typically don't have as much protection as something that's mobile. I mean, when you build something that's going to be carried in your pocket all the time while running, there's extra protection and technology that goes into that versus something that's intended to sit on your desk. But the other reason is there's also the idea of the right tool for the right job, having things split, different devices split into different tasks,
right,
where you can have something specialized. And as if you look back where we were 5 years ago to where we are today, the technology has advanced a lot more, so the processors can handle a lot more that's going on, even in the mobile devices. But it still becomes a comfort level for what is the device that you want to have at that time to give you the best possible experience. And for some cases, that's having just that straight mobile-only device.
Yeah, but that also, I think, brings us to why we have tablets. Is what's the best experience for the media that you need at that moment? Because, you know, for the longest time, we had phones, we had laptops, and when they introduced the iPad, it seemed like a useless category. And then once we realized what we could do with it, then it all of a sudden it became a necessity.
Right. Well, I think what's also happening is you're seeing we've been migrating, as you know, and this comes back to what we're talking about with the cloud, the whole industry has been migrating away from a device-specific type of thing, and it's more about your data and your information and getting to it on whichever device you have. Whether that's going to be on your tablet, on your phone, on your laptop, or logging into somebody else's computer and getting to your stuff and giving you that freedom. Because ultimately, it is about your data. If you have a computer or a hard drive or a tablet crash, who cares about the hardware cost if you don't have your data backed up? Because ultimately, it is always about your data.
Your stuff. And there's no permanent hardware home for your data, because everybody knows you're going to have a computer 5 years as good for even a desktop or a laptop, and you're going to have to migrate it to something else. 2 years as good for a mobile device. You know, nobody thinks in terms of like, this is my computer, this is where everything's going to be. Even servers eventually die. So it is about kind of picking up all your stuff. It's almost like you're moving apartments every now and then. You know, you know, you're renting these apartments. You feel like you live there. It feels like home. But eventually you know that someday you're going to take all your stuff that you want and go somewhere else with it.
Right.
I think it's just crazy, too, because like you're saying, 5 years ago, like how the technology's changed, even like 10 years ago. I mean, the first time I ever heard of Apple, Jeff Goldblum was doing like commercials for these big neon computers.
And that's why you heard of it.
And that's the only reason
I heard about it.
Well, yeah, and that's only because he had already successfully used that tool to interface with alien technology to ultimately defeat the shields.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but you also know about Steven's unhealthy Jeff Goldblum obsession.
I don't know if it's unhealthy, John. That's a strong word to throw around.
So what you're saying is that there is a healthy Jeff Goldblum obsession?
Whatever's less than Steven is healthier.
Basically, what I'm saying is, like, this is fucking Star Trek technology is what we have. Yeah. Like, your generation, the people who grew up watching Star Trek, decided we want that, and then they spent like the last 15 years giving it to all of us. It's fucking crazy. Yeah. And it's just like, I don't think anyone really takes the time to realize, like, and my phone is a hunk of shit. This is useless. But like, your guys' phone, like the internet, like all this crazy stuff that are on phones now, you have a whole computer in your phone that goes anywhere you want, you go. It's crazy.
Now, do you think we've hit a plateau with it?
Because no, I think we're just getting started. But you know, that's why I'm so scared of it.
But the last couple of iPhones, and you could put this at the, you know, at the legacy of Steve Jobs, but it seems like the last couple of iPhones have been very incremental. It's just like, well, this one's bigger. It's got a bigger screen.
I think what's really happened is, you've seen some incremental stuff. We've kind of landed on a form factor for now. Part of that's fashion. Part of that's going to change.
Yeah.
The wearable space is what everybody's been talking about. And
The
watch is only part of the wearable space. It's a subset. I think we need to start thinking the wearable space is bigger. You know, obviously Google Glass was an interesting experiment. I think when you start looking at the wearable space, you have to consider Fitbit and the other Nike health bands that aren't traditional watches and other devices that we're wearing. You know, imagine smart headphones and, you know, in the future and what you could do with that and earbuds like we saw in the movie Her. And that's really interesting. And you're starting to see some of the back end happen there. What I think was really interesting and perhaps the most important aspect of the recent Apple announcement wasn't the phone or even the Apple Watch. They actually specifically are not calling it the iWatch. Was what they were talking about on mobile payments and building out an entirely new back end to support mobile payments.
The digital wallet.
And it's not just a digital wallet. It's combining the fingerprint sensor with a technology that, you know, 2 years ago they were saying was stupid and they weren't going to do, namely NFC, which Google got all over and is now at most Google phones, a lot of the Microsoft phones all have NFC chips in there. And NFC is the technology that's in, for example, if you have a key card to gain access to a building that you physically tap to a sensor, That's using NFC. You see that in a lot of security devices. And basically, it's a unique identifier that you can reference back and forth. That's going to be part of the new iPhone. You pair that with new readers, and now you're talking about actually being able to tap your phone. It authenticates to your fingerprint to pay for stuff, which then can support Apple's backend or Visa, MasterCard. And what's really interesting is you look, Square was already a company that was disrupting this space.
Yeah,
as a small business owner, you know, I mean, what are you paying in credit card transaction fees?
Right. It's the, because you get the monthly charge, you get every perf fee that you get charged. It's ridiculous. And we were using the Squares on the phone at the conventions.
Right.
That's how we do all our convention transactions, is on an iPad with the little thing you just plug in. It's awesome.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. And like you said, it's like the fees aren't anywhere near what, you know, you get on like a terminal or something. Now they were saying, we just changed terminals, and they said the same tap technology, that they're going to have that, because like Target had that huge leak of credit card.
Right.
You know, because that keeps happening. They keep trying to figure out different ways to make it harder to get information.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous.
And Europe's already been very far ahead of the U.S. with chip and pin technology, where you can use a pin for a credit card and actually physically slide it into a terminal. So that's real interesting. That's supposed to be coming to most U.S. merchants, I think, next year. The Visa and MasterCard are talking about changing some of the liability arrangements around that to drive that. But I think when you start looking at, now imagine Apple comes forward, or Google Wallet being another one, and says, okay, put this terminal in your store, you're connected to the net, use this, and we'll charge you 0.5% or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that gets filled through your Google account on the back end, so the merchant can now have a direct relationship with Apple and Google, undercutting Visa and MasterCard.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I think, that's the revolutionary stuff. That's the part that I think is really the most important stuff to come out of the recent Apple presentation.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of like when Amazon bought the Comixology app a couple months ago. Because Comixology was doing really well with digital comics. They were the number one digital comics. And then Amazon decided they were buying them. And the first thing they did was cancel in-app purchases. And customers got really upset. They said, no, they're the same price. But now you go to Amazon, because now they're bypassing. So, and I think it's Marvel and DC are making the same percentage they were making from Amazon, which is what they were making on the graphic novels.
Yeah.
They were making more when Comixology was doing it. So
mm-hmm.
for the customer, it's this extra step that seems meaningless. But what Amazon's really doing is buying a distributor.
Right.
And that seems to be what Apple's doing. They're buying a method of payment.
Right. You know, I mean, and developing their own and getting people more comfortable with using that.
Mm-hmm.
And with being able to control that on the back end, because that then also includes, you know, there's a lot more information exchange in the back end. My understanding of this, and this I could be mistaken on part of it, is that now, whereas Visa and MasterCard would also get a lot more information about the purchaser, now Apple is capturing that information instead of Visa and MasterCard, and some of the merchants are not getting that same relationship. Amazon's another real interesting one. When you look at devices like the Amazon phone and the Kindle Fire, both of which have gone with, you know, away from, you know, straight ahead Android, it's because those devices are really, or you know, with the Fire in particular, it's really built as a front end into Amazon. It's a tool to sell more stuff on Amazon. And that's why it's optimized for that, as opposed to more of a general purpose item. It's been, on the Twit network, the Twit podcast, often they talk about, you know, how the different companies make money. And, you know, Apple makes money when you buy hardware. Amazon makes money when you buy anything else. Google makes money when you use the internet. So they have very different business models in terms of how they're profiting. And that's really driving a lot of their devices.
Yeah. I mean, if they're competitors, but it's like they're all making money doing different things, which is interesting. Like you said, it's like you use the internet, Google's making money. You buy anything off Amazon, that's how they make money, you know? It's crazy.
And that's how complex this business, this whole industry has become, is that everybody is both a competitor and a vendor to everybody else.
Yeah. Well, it's like, remember when Amazon was like, hey, we're going to have drones deliver packages.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a terrible fucking idea.
I love that idea.
It's crazy.
You don't like that idea because you're afraid of Skynet. If a robot can give me the Adam West Batman box set faster, damn it, robot, get to my house. You know what? I want that robot to know where I am. I want that robot to find out if I'm at work.
Right. No matter where you are, that robot follows you. I want the robot
to start coming to my house at noon and going, oh, well, he's at work. And then it diverts itself and goes to work and goes, here's your Adam West box set.
But you can't watch it until you get home.
I don't care. I would stroke the box. You just want it. Because there's no Blu-ray devices in laptops.
But I have the unhealthy obsession with Jeff Goldblum.
Batman is broader and encompasses other things. Jeff Goldblum is one man.
Jeff Goldblum would make an awesome Batman.
He would. I see what you're doing, John.
It's a detective.
You're committing crimes, and I don't think you should commit those crimes.
Who wouldn't want to watch that?
Right? That's 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. That's what that is.
So then the other thing was the U2.
Oh, let's talk about the U2 album, because this... Steve and I were talking about this in the store this week, and I believe with this U2 album, we have found the mouth of the internet, because 500 million people are looking the gift of this album straight into it. I thought... I'll preface this. I'm a big U2 fan. I've been as big a U2 fan as I've known Bill. Like, you know, I came in with like Joshua Tree and Rattle and Hum, and I have never let go. That's one of the things that you should probably know about me. If I say I love something,
you are
all I am not leaving.
John, John likes something. He's not fucking around. He likes all of the things to do with that thing.
I am one Batman issue away from having every Batman issue published in my lifetime.
At C2, your fetus years?
At C2, no.
Well, fetus months, my I birth guess. Year. No, no one's a fetus for a year. Then you got problems.
That could...
Doctors, hey, I corrected myself. It's late. It's been a long day.
There's a hyperbaric chamber. That could be the next goal.
There you go.
I was born in May 1972, and I have almost every issue from May 1972. Now I go back. Well, that would be September 1971.
There you go.
So now I have to buy my fetus months.
Right. You got to go back.
But the thing is that... You say that as a joke, and I take that seriously. That shows how much I fucking love it.
Right. I didn't say it a joke. 6 months from now, that's really going to bother you.
That's totally going to bother me.
Until you don't complete it in.
That's like every time a new series of figures comes out, John and I have this exact same conversation. They make the announcement, oh, there's a new Batman series coming out, or there's a new Indiana Jones collection coming out. You know, I saw them. You know, these two look kind of cool, so I'm going to get those two, and those two only. And I go... Bullshit. You are getting them all.
How many versions of Batman do you need?
6 months later, they're all there.
I could not resist.
True.
And that's awesome.
So, yeah, so that's that keeps us still on topic because I love you too. I will buy every album they do. Mm-hmm. I've seen them twice on tour. The first time I saw them was the best concert I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm not letting go of them. I thought this was a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's like we were talking earlier today. It's a really smart idea they did. Now, are these numbers you're saying, are these accurate? Were you like 500 million people?
There are 500 million iTunes subscribers.
Okay. And what are we saying was like the percentage of people that are like pissed off that they got this like free gift?
According to Twitter, all of them.
All of them. Yeah. Everybody.
Well, you see, I think here's the thing. We're running into a culture clash now regarding to the way Apple has always presented themselves recently, the think different. It's about the personal experience. It's about what you can do with your stuff. And really, that's what the internet is about. It's about giving you your own personal experience, whether that's going to be in news, in music, in your social groups. You know, you really build that up by yourself. And I think if Apple had gone ahead and said, you know, and just put a banner up saying, hey, free YouTube album download, or YouTube album. I'd hate to hear the YouTube album.
Oh, God.
YouTube.
Oh, God. How many fucking cats are in that?
It's a never ending disc of hate.
Right.
Is what it is.
Hates cats and babies. No.
But I think once they went ahead and just stuck it in everybody's account and said, here, you like this now. That, you know, directly contradicts the whole personal and building your own message.
But see, it doesn't download itself. It's just when you go to your purchased albums, it says you bought it.
And your purchased albums, they're a reflection of you. They're, you know, and a lot of people see it at a level, it's a way of self-curation.
That's what your library is for. Like your purchased albums are just to me, maybe I'm right. Not thinking the way these people are thinking. Is the purchase album is just an invoice to me. It's just what my account, what I've downloaded. Oh yeah, here's a bunch of free apps that I didn't like.
Right.
Here's something. But it's my library is where I'm curating the music, because that's what the music actually is.
Right. I think there's that whole part though. There's that lack of consent that's a part of that. And Yeah, it seems silly, and I disagree. I don't have an issue with it, but I understand that impulse.
Just because I'm wearing headphones does not mean you can force feed music into my ears.
Nobody exactly. Wants any music into
YouTube
your ears.
Raped the internet with that fucking album.
And that's the other thing too. There's an element of there's also a perceived element of cheating to it in that U2 now has the best selling album ever.
So yeah. Allison wants to talk.
I'm going
to
chime in on something here. I think on that notion of consent, people don't like to come to the realization that we are not in control of our phones. And yeah. That Apple can go and put something on our phone or take something off and that it's not private.
Yeah.
So I think that was the biggest issue with the U2 album was not whether it was free or if you wanted to download it or not. It's that it showed up without your consent.
Right.
And the people don't like the idea that something can be done on your private phone without you knowing about it or without you giving your consent.
That is a good point.
Right, absolutely.
I think I am thinking about this differently. I'm not thinking about it from an Apple perspective. I'm thinking about it from a U2 perspective.
Sure.
And yeah. In terms of U2, this makes total sense because U2, since the Joshua Tree, they had 4 or 5 albums to really build their audience. I'll go back further. Since they did Live Aid, and Bill, you remember when they did Live Aid, they were kind of a nothing band. They were like a big country, you know, like Aha. They were kind of known. Well, Pride was a hit, but
yeah,
I think they were more tied to
their music about the Troubles,
right? But they were
a political band,
but they were a lesser known band. And
right.
In fact, if you watched the Live Aid coverage, you remember there were two concerts going on at the same time. There was one in America, there was one in the UK,
right.
and the coverage was all the same, but it ping ponged between them. And they cut to them in the middle of a song, which shows how important U2
right.
was at that time. They were just like, oh, and in the UK. Well, in the U.S., they're breaking down the set right now. They're setting up some drums, so let's just go to the U.K.
Right.
And they were finishing a song, and then they did Bad, which that was when Bono jumped off the stage into the audience and grabbed a girl and danced with her and hugged her. And everybody just – it was a star-making moment. And then they came out with a Joshua Tree, and that was the
right.
biggest album of that time.
Right.
It was the biggest album until maybe Appetite for Destruction.
Right.
But since then, they got very used to being the biggest band in the world, and they have spent the last 25 years figuring out ways to stay the biggest band in the world because they're looking at bands like the Rolling Stones or The Who that go out on tour, and they're just kind of doing their hits from 20 years ago,
right.
and they're making money. They're filling,
sure.
they're filling out stadiums, but they're not seen as important anymore.
Right.
So every move they've made, like Octone Baby, let's change everything that this band sounds like.
Right.
And that album has Mysterious Ways and One Biggest Band in the World. Then they go completely into electronica. And then when that fails, they pull back with All That You Can't Leave Behind in 2000. It's like, we're going to embrace our old sound again. And the tours are huge. They're all huge stadium tours. The 360 tour was that giant spaceship
right.
in the middle of football stadiums, which I did not think worked. And the biggest blow was their last album only sold 1 million copies, which for them is a bomb.
Right.
So they're
insane, by the way. If you're selling 1 million of anything, 1 million, no one knows what that looks like on paper. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking crazy.
Especially when you're doing that with music today, with albums today.
And that's the that's the problem they find themselves in. They're all middle-aged men. They're all in their mid-50s now. They're no longer relevant. They want to be relevant.
I love how, as a group, or at least John and I are sitting here thinking, yeah, middle-aged men, mid to late 50s. Yep. Definitely not in their middle age is not in your 40s.
Right, 10 yeah. years from now.
Although half the room is in their 20s.
So you said these guys they're not happy that they're past the prime or whatever. But
I think
like,
they're worried.
Is there anything wrong with being, you know, super successful and filthy rich? When did that stop being cool?
If you're the Rolling Stones, yeah. If you're U2, you want to be seen as important.
Yeah, but I mean,
cool. If you're Bono, you want to be out there doing this charitable work, getting the attention, and you, I think the idea is when you go from 10 million to 1 million,
yeah,
you notice it.
Yeah, I guess. So but it's like, you know, how many people are like Bono's? He's got like one name. Who else does that? Madonna.
Prince. And Madonna. And Madonna's done kind of the same thing from a constant
like a
reinvention
of
herself.
Yeah. Yeah,
like a handful of people have one name. Like a handful. There's like maybe a dozen of them.
The Edge. Does that count as two names?
No, it's two names. Using two words.
The Edge walking that, around Manhattan on a random Saturday afternoon.
Did it was not the Edge. When did this album hit?
Well, it came out with the iPhone launch, so it was one.
Was that last week?
Yeah, it was one big event.
Yeah.
Well, what day? Like a week ago?
It was,
like,
it was a Tuesday.
Did Bono have enough time to come out and be like, "Why y'all?"
He was there. No, well, they wrote a letter on their website of like, hey, we worked on this new album for a long time. We hope you like it. Hey, if you don't like it, then you can just ignore it and not download it. And if you're not sure, why don't you download it and see what you think of this band that you've heard about but you never really listened to. And I thought he took the right tack.
Right.
And I like the album. I think it was in every way for the band it was a success because, yeah, it's a big promotional stunt to go, hey, we've moved 500 million copies of an album that's never happened before.
Yeah, but like he said, that's fucking cheating.
Yeah, it is. And they said Billboard's not accepting it.
Okay, that's good.
What they did find out within the last week, 2 million people downloaded it.
Okay.
So that's already double.
That's already double platinum.
And it's already double what the last album did.
Yeah.
So it's already seen as an improvement. And also, what's most important to them, they got the big news story, the attention, and hey, in 2 months, when they go, we got a world tour coming, there's 2 million people who've heard the album, everyone has seen them in the news, and everyone's interested. How many times, you know, I read an email last week that Stevie Wonder was coming to town to do everything from Songs in the Key of Life, but I read that at one place, and I never saw it again. You know,
and he was playing a casino 25 miles out of town.
Nah, I don't know if it's that big. I think he's playing, might be the Chicago Theater, or might be, it's somewhere good,
yeah.
But it's, he's, you know, not blowing out Soldier Field.
You know, it's like whenever I drive down towards Tacoma and I see the Emerald Queen Casino on the, I think it's the Tulalip Reservation or whatever, and they're advertising, you know, REO Speedwagon or whatever band or performer it is, you know, I always feel a little bad for that performer.
And that's what U2 doesn't want.
And that's what U2 doesn't want.
Yes. I mean, I always think like, yeah, Britney Spears is like a show, I guess, in Vegas all the time now. Like she's
like Celine Dion.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, that's. I feel a little bad for her.
Yeah, but everybody
she's not going on tour. You know, like,
yeah, everybody has that peak. And
yeah,
and I think the scary thing is when you have that peak, you know,
there's nowhere to go but down.
The higher the peak, the further the fall.
Right. Yeah. Everything you do is seen as a failure.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I guess it's like, you know, if
look at Stan Lee. We'll bring it back to comics. Stan Lee. Stan Lee is never going to do anything as good as
what he
hasn't
been relevant since 1970,
I'd say.
Yeah.
I mean, his stuff in the
60s. Yeah, Power Man. Oof. What a character.
Was that him? Was that Stan Lee?
I don't know. He was on the DVD talking about him.
He'll talk about anybody.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, but it's basically just like
fear.
You said.
You know who I like? Bane.
But this guy's probably, since like he created like the main Marvel Universe, you know, you figure he's probably quadrupled that number in like things he's tried to like create,
right?
And name one of them.
Yeah,
that stuck.
Well,
you know?
Remember, like 10 years ago, they had Just Imagine. You remember that stunt?
Yeah.
And it was Stan Lee
rebooting
every DC character. He was like, "Well, if I had a guy named Batman, he'd be like this," and it didn't work.
To that point, you know why that doesn't work is
Stan Lee did DC.
Yeah, yes. You didn't know about this?
I did not know about this.
It was a series that were all called Just Imagine.
They're all
one shots. Stan Lee does Superman. Stan Lee does Flash. He did Crisis. He did the Justice League. Mm-hmm. You know what the big problem with that was?
We already have a Batman and a Superman. And
bigger than that, Jack Kirby's dead. So no, seriously. Stan Lee's great, but it's like that's like a peanut butter and jelly situation, right? You can't have just a jelly sandwich. You're missing the other key ingredient.
My argument.
You're missing the part that makes it sticky.
Yeah, exactly.
But my argument to that is that Spider-Man's great and Kirby had nothing to do with it.
Sure, but Steve Ditko then. And it's just like, that guy's like sitting in an apartment somewhere in New York refusing to do interviews.
Yes.
You know, so it's like he might as well be dead. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying Steve Ditko should be dead.
That's
what I'm saying. I'm just saying.
What you're saying is anyone who won't come on our podcast might as well be dead.
Might as well be, because there's no proof that they're alive. So basically what I'm saying is just like, you know, Stanley's a great man. No one's disputing this man and his great, you know, accomplishments.
But he's not who he was in the 60s.
Right, because it's a collaborative process. Steve Jobs didn't invent the iPhone. It was that other guy, Wazowski or whatever his name is. Right? Isn't that the guy?
Well, Wozniak was long gone by then, but what Steve Jobs did, but Wozniak was really what made the Apple products possible.
That computer.
He made it the entire, you know, he was the technologist
right.
throughout the whole
Steve
thing
Jobs a business
and
man.
Really built up the business. You saw a similar dynamic play out in Microsoft where you had Paul Allen being one of the key technologists, and Bill Gates was probably more technically involved than Steve Jobs was
in
Apple. But yeah, you had those partnerships, and you have those early partnerships that really let incredible things happen. But
right.
Wozniak was amazing. He was the guy who, you know, his biography is a great story. He talks about everything from, you know, the first Pong machine for TV.
Yeah,
for hooked up to your TV. That was Wozniak, you know, getting early started in the video games and his work for HP and developing new stuff and the Homebrew Computer Club in Silicon Valley back in the late 70s. It was just amazing what he was able to do to come up with the technology that could potentially potentially change the world. By the time the phones rolled out, Wozniak was already long gone and was a hobbyist in building other things and doing other things. He built an entire music festival in Arizona, and did a whole bunch of stuff.
Same way that like Paul Allen built the Sci-Fi Hall of Fame and the
Sci-Fi Hall of Fame,
Experience
Music Project. You know, start owning sports teams and building stadia, and has become a major real estate developer in Seattle now. So they've had these incredible additional acts outside of the business where they made their huge money.
Yeah, it's I guess all I'm saying is, you know, it's everyone so like, oh, Steve Jobs, he died, he was like a nerd Jesus or whatever, and it's just like, yeah, it's a terrible tragedy, this man passed away, he was sick or whatever, but it's like, well, let's not forget all these other people.
Yeah, now the other guy, it's like that Bill Burr bit.
Yeah, right, where he talks about, like, who really built the fucking iPhone. It's like, well, 100,000 nerds built it, and Steve Jobs said, just put more stuff in it, you know?
And actually, Steve Jobs, you know, key thing he did was it was all take stuff out of it.
Oh, really?
Take more and more stuff out
of it. Make
it simpler?
Make it simpler.
You ever hear that,
you know,
that the graphic design?
Buttons out of it.
They always say, you know, when you're doing graphic design, you know, you take more away from it. You don't just add a bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. The best graphic design is always the simplest. You just take stuff out.
Yeah, well, it's that key with writing, too. The key, mm-hmm. key to writing, and as we learned the hard way with making movies, is it's about what you take out, and it gets better the shorter you take it out and the more editing
it's
you do.
It's a really hard way to think,
it.
I think, which
it's,
is why you don't get a lot of creative people.
It's doing exactly what's necessary.
Yeah.
But and when it gets too complicated. But I think what we're saying is these guys had their peaks, and some guys recognize when their time is done. Some guys just morph it into just staying in the spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I just want to be famous for, I'm fine being famous
be
for what
famous.
I did way long ago, as long as there's people that love it. And what you two are saying, they want to be as important now as they were 20 years ago.
And I guess
and this was their way of doing it. This was their way of saying, look, the music industry is in a complete mess. iTunes is really the only game in town, and it's still only producing a fraction of what CD sales used to be,
right.
But let's do the biggest thing you could possibly do on iTunes. And it was a very awkward exchange if you watch the Apple launch, where he's talking to Tim Cook and he's like, can we give it to everybody now? Yes. In 5 seconds, we could do it right now. Yes, we can. All right, let's do it now. Okay, it's done. Everybody gets it. And then they turn to the audience and they're like, we're not kidding. You have the album now. Like, they didn't know how to, like, have
right.
a big moment.
How to explain
moment.
It, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because, like, they already played the single. It was
right.
like, what else are we going to do?
Well, I think when we're talking about this, too, the other issue that this hints at is, you know, as you mentioned earlier, it's about control, and it hints at the privacy of your phones. Exactly. The other aspect of it is that it reminds us subconsciously that when you're talking about iTunes and you're talking about digital music and things like that, you don't own it. You have a license for it. And
right.
in fact, technically, even with a CD, when you buy a CD, you don't own the music. You own a license for that music on that device. And what that means is that when it's a purely digital form on your phone, not only can they give it to you at any time, they can take it away at any time.
That's crazy. Now, if they take it away, do you get your money back? Seriously. No. Not the free thing. I'm talking like if you go out and buy like an album.
No. Not necessarily. It depends on the terms of the license.
Yeah. Yep. That's that thing that I never read. I just said accept. I agreed. I've read this. No one reads that shit.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like reading your mortgage. You never read your fucking mortgage.
Oh, I looked at the important part.
And knowing your wife, I'm sure she read each and every word in there like five times.
To me. Did you know? I'm like, I don't know. What? You know what? I bought this house 4 years ago. I don't know what escrow is.
I don't even know what that word means. I don't think I've ever heard that word before.
No, it sounds like some kind of southern law from like the 1800s.
Right? It's like, just like an unwritten law.
Sorry, boy, you caught bootlegging. You're going to be in escrow and then whips come out. Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, this was a story that popped up a few years ago with the Kindle where a bunch of people bought a copy of 1984, ironically enough, for their Kindles. And it turned out that Amazon did not, or it had been improperly licensed through the store. So Amazon went ahead and took it back off of everybody's Kindles.
That's crazy.
Which was really, really caused a lot of problems because, well, it was exactly. It was so iconic for that. Plus, you know, all those students who had taken notes, Kindle notes, alongside it for their text, they lost all their notes, too.
Oh, shit. Did they reimburse those people or no?
Well, no, I don't remember if they paid
for it.
Actually, I think in that case, they did give them credit for that, but they didn't necessarily have to.
Go ahead and do that. Go ahead, Apple. Go ahead, whoever. Take something away like that and see what fucking happens, right?
This is what happened. They gave them something and this is what happens.
Right, but that's what
they were
saying.
Like, here's an album for free.
Imagine if they took away some shit you wanted.
Yeah.
We'd fucking pitchfork in the street.
That's why I want a big hard drive. That's why I don't trust the cloud.
And that's why I still buy CDs.
Wow. Yeah, because you never know.
Yeah, I've converted all mine and then they're in 3 external hard drives.
Exactly, there you go.
But if your house burns down, they're all gone.
Yeah, I used to leave one at work.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, you gotta do something.
It's gotta go somewhere.
Yeah, and that's what it is. We do live in this age, in this digital age, where we have all this stuff, and it doesn't take up any physical space other than however big a hard drive is.
Yeah.
But
it's a nice reversal.
But as you're saying, it's not entirely ours.
Right, which is, to me, that's because, like you said, it's a license. It's like, well, of course you don't own the music. You didn't pay for the music. You paid for the license in this small time frame, you know?
Yeah, and it's also, what's to stop them when they change the format? There was a thing in Time Magazine where you used to said they're working with Apple on a new digital format because, of course, they need to be part of the next big thing. And what's to stop iTunes when that works? That it just goes, yeah, we don't play MP3s anymore.
Exactly.
We don't play AACs anymore. And then I'm like, well, what about all these CDs that I've ripped that I've sold to secondhand CD shops so I wouldn't have a bookcase? Like, yeah, you don't have the Beatles albums anymore.
At least they won't, you know, once you, like, an MP3 is not going to end up in, like, a landfill with, like, all those 8-track tapes and VCRs.
No, just the hard drives will.
The hard drives will. You know,
it takes up
much less space.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's the thing. Luckily you do have these, I hate to use the word digital underground because now we're going to think of the Humpty Dance for the next 20 minutes. But you have these, you have pirates that'll just go, yeah, well, I built an MP3 player. And it works. Like, if you go on torrent sites, and I'm not saying I ever have, but if you go on torrent sites, you don't see a lot of MP3s. You see a lot of FLAC, these completely lossless
and probably a lot of Org Vorbis as well.
Yeah, a lot of Org Vorbis. But you know what? You don't play those on iTunes,
right?
So it always becomes like when there is a mainstream, what is the mainstream cutting out?
Right.
What is the highest selling album of all time, like officially? Do you guys know what that
is? It was the Dark Side of the Moon
still.
For a long, long time. Yeah. Remember in Rolling Stone on the back?
Yeah,
the back would have like a top 200 albums.
It was like number one for like 800 weeks.
They don't count
weeks.
Like just debuts. Like they're talking like of all time, meaning like all
yes,
right,
most
if
units
that
sold.
Album
yeah.
sells
most
tomorrow,
sold,
they put another
still,
little
yep.
check, you know, next to it.
So, yeah. So I have a question for the 20 somethings in the room.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Do you still buy albums, whether on CD or standalone,
no.
or are you just buying individual tracks?
I don't buy anything anymore. Here's why. The internet. Everything's seriously. If you wait long enough,
I so wish you stopped talking. That was like a Charlie Day moment. You're like, here's why I don't buy anything: the internet.
Right. End of discussion. No, for real. Think about it. I wanted to see Godzilla, and it came out on DVD like a week ago. And I got it 3 weeks ago on a flash drive from somebody I'm not going to name names. Why would I ever pay for any of this shit again?
Right, well, even if you're paying, even through streaming or Pandora or Spotify or any of
Netflix,
those.
Netflix, yeah.
Netflix.
I was, a good example is Cosmos. I was in the store and I wanted to see Cosmos because Hulu pulled it off. You could see like the last four episodes or something. And I had it in my hand and it said Blu-ray $60 or $40 or whatever it was. And I said, fuck this. And I went home and a week later it was on Netflix. Why would I ever buy a DVD ever again?
Yeah.
I'm actually the opposite of Steven. I mean, I do my fair share of downloading.
Yeah.
You know, but I'll be on Pandora and I'll see a track I like and I'll, you know, take a little snap screenshot of it so that I can refer to it later and I'll go and buy the album.
Yeah.
If I like the whole one song, I will go buy the album. But that's that Clark collector gene.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's genetic, John. It's not you. You don't have to feel so alone.
You met my dad today. You must have all the rest.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the middle there where, like I said, my complete musical collection is digital. I own no CDs. But I do have it backed up on several hard drives. So if it does disappear or iTunes collapses, I can listen to it in a different way. But I do buy Blu-rays, and because Netflix is the more obvious version of that. You don't own any of that those movies.
Nothing.
You know, there's all five Star Trek series on every episode of Star Trek is on Netflix.
Yeah, and they won't always be. They'll pull them off and put something else on.
They pull stuff off all the time.
It says on Netflix, it'll say, watch this soon because this such and such date, we're pulling it away.
Right, and so I buy Blu-rays for the things I know I'll always want to watch. You know, something like Raiders of the Lost Ark is a perfect example. It's not streaming anywhere, but if Netflix put it on tomorrow, I wouldn't sell my Blu-ray because what happens when it goes away? That's a movie I'm always going to want to go back to. Yeah. My music is the same thing.
I guess it's like 90% of the stuff I figure I'll just wait for Netflix. But then there is that 10%. Like Indiana Jones is a great example. You know, it's not on Netflix.
I don't think it's on Amazon Prime or Hulu.
I don't even have those things.
Right,
so it's like, I'll always want to watch that movie. So it's something where it's like, that's like something I'd say is like, there is a select things like worth having. I just don't believe in the needing all of this stuff and having like a place to put it. And it's expensive. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, internet.
Sometimes for free. Also, I'm poor, so I can't afford all this stuff. So that's probably a factor, and I hate technology.
Well, I was having this debate about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Renee went to Target, and she's like, what do you need? I was like, hey, if they have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because I got Winter Soldier, so let me know. And she calls, and she's like, it's $50 at Target. And I'm like, I know. It's a Blu-ray season box set, so it's cheaper than like a Star Trek box set. But I really had to think about it because I know it's coming on Netflix. It's coming on Netflix.
Yeah.
But then again, my shelf has the Marvel Studios run, which...
But John, but perhaps, maybe wait until they finish making that show and then get the box set that has all of the things because you're going to have to buy that more than once, right? If this isn't true, we can stop the show. But I'm pretty sure...
This is not true.
But I'm pretty sure you're going to buy it like the first season. You'll buy the second season, the third season, and then such and such. And then they'll stop making that show at some point. And then you're going to go out and buy the complete set because it'll have like extra bullshit.
I remember that anger not only from John, but from a whole bunch of other people when the Simpsons box sets for each season suddenly changed the physical shape of the box so they no longer match.
Yeah.
And they went to the heads.
That really pisses people off.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do stuff like that.
Pisses people off more than a Free U2 album. Like, right. Which is apparently the angriest you can make someone.
Sliding scale, you know? Holy shit.
War atrocities.
Right.
Simpsons box sets changing shape. New Free U2 album.
Right.
Oh, and New Doctor.
New Doctor. Oh,
but that's a temporary situation. People get over that New Doctor thing pretty quick, don't they?
Yeah, Ben's starting to get over it. You know what?
And he's a child.
He was so mad. You know,
and Matt Smith was the Doctor for like half of his life.
Yeah, we were doing it well for the 2 years he's been watching Doctor Who. But, you know, I was going to say this for the greatest thing in the world, but that's a perfectly natural segue. is we haven't covered Peter Capaldi as the Doctor yet, and Bill and I have been watching the season. I know, well, and Allison's not into Doctor Who, but I know you still haven't caught up.
I've seen like two episodes.
Yeah, so
one more than I saw last time we talked about Doctor Who. I'm trying, guys. I'm really trying. Someday.
Well, let's just close out the show instead of cutting to Greatest Thing in the World. Bill, now that you've seen two of them,
mm-hmm.
what are your impressions of the 12th Doctor and where the show's going?
I like him. I like Capaldi as the Doctor. He's got a little bit darker, a little bit of an edge, really, and yet he's still. There's still something in the back of his head. There's still Matt Smith in the back of his head. And I think there's more Matt Smith in Capaldi's Doctor than there was Tennant in Smith's Doctor or Eccleston in Tennant's Doctor. And I think we see that in the way he looks at the Dalek in Into the Dalek. Mm-hmm. I think we see some of that in the way that he looks at Clara and just deals with her. That there's definitely some sort of... And it's not the impish Matt Smith. It's the deeply troubled and concerned Matt Smith. Mm. And I think that's there combined with just a darker edge to him overall, having been, 700 to 1,000 years since his last regeneration.
I have questions. All right, Doctor Who. So he turns into a new dude every couple seasons.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Does then when he goes and he like shows up with the Daleks, does he have like a sneak attack? He's like, I don't fucking know what I look like yet. And he attacks him, or are they always kind of like, hey, there's the Doctor. That's his new face.
That's pretty much more the reaction. It's like, oh, look, it's the Doctor. And there have been times where they've said, oh, I like your new face. Or it's like, it seems like it's only human beings that don't get the idea of regeneration.
I don't think it's that they don't, that they recognize him. I think they recognize the TARDIS. And I think
the Doctor's showing up in a flying TARDIS. People are doing that?
It's the same car,
right?
And I think that definitely has an impact on it. But I think yes, there's that. And then once he does something doctory,
when that he pulls out that screwdriver and starts waving it around, they get to the idea.
Yeah, and I mean.
it's very confusing if you haven't gotten
into
it.
It's a magic screwdriver, and he flies around in a telephone booth.
It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It was very popular in the 70s.
it's awesome. My girlfriend is just now getting into it. She's been binge watching Doctor Who.
There's something about Doctor Who where it's there's always an awareness of it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first time I ever saw Doctor Who, I was at my very first comic book convention, and this is like 1985. And there were people dressed as Tom Baker.
Right.
And I was like, what is this? And then my friend showed me the Marvel comic. And he was like, and they were like, yeah, he flies around in an elevator and he wears a scarf.
Right.
And they were like, and he eats jelly beans. And that was the big Tom Baker thing. And I'm like, I don't want to watch
it. I describe Doctor Who fandom as like it's a singularity. Because once you, there's like a threshold, and I've seen everyone I know does this, where they're like kind of wavering around, and like, oh, maybe I'll watch Doctor Who. Everyone's watching Doctor Who. And then it's like, they pass that like point of no return where it's like, oh, they're gone. And then they're all fucking like, every week they're watching Doctor Who. That's all they talk about. That's all they're into. It's crazy.
That happened to me halfway through the third season of the new episode.
Yeah, you're just sucked in now. You're done.
Yeah, with the episode of the Family of Blood saga.
It's crazy.
Oh, in the third season. For me, it was a slow build.
Mm-hmm.
Eccleston, I never quite got a feeling of Eccleston as the Doctor because I was trying to figure out the show.
Right.
So I was just like, what is the world this lives in? And it took me a long time to realize it's not Star Trek and it doesn't have hard science facts. They just throw magic in you.
Right.
You. And it wasn't until Tennant that I started to really go deep into it. And then I was knocking out 10 a day.
See, that's what I'm saying. Black hole.
Yeah, look at Tina.
Yeah.
Tina, she's...
See? You kind of saw her getting interested in it. Mm-hmm. You saw, like, oh, maybe I'll watch this. Everyone's watching this. Everyone says this is good. And then it's just like, fucking, that's all she's doing now.
See, my problem, and it's the same for many other TV shows, is that I feel in order to really get a good handle on it, I need to start from the beginning. And who has the time for that?
Yeah, you need to... I've heard you need to start with the reboot guy, the thug.
Start with Eccleston. Yeah. We're about
so you can skip all the other the 12
the
doctors.
The stuff from the 60s and the 70s. I'm going back and watching some of that stuff, Matt, now. And man, that's some slogging. It's a very different storytelling style versus what we
it's
have.
It's like
now.
Trying to read Silver Age comics and going like, oh, you like Spider-Man? Here, read Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to take it at the context at a time this thing was made.
Yeah, but yeah, binge watching is such a commitment because I've been people are telling me to watch Sons of Anarchy. A lot of people are into Sons of Anarchy.
Tina's
and I'm like
saying all that too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know that I have time to do six seasons in a month.
Yeah.
Like
I got kids.
That's exactly why I haven't started watching Lost yet.
You don't bother. But and how full is your TiVo usually?
Well, right now there's 25 back episodes of Walking Dead I have to get through.
Where are you in Walking Dead? What season?
Oh, I'm still in the I'm there. Michonne has just left the governor.
See,
you're in three.
I didn't even get through that.
Not too bad. You didn't get that far. You can't watch it in the shop. That's a big problem.
Well, you can't kind of. I gave up in season two when they looked for that stupid little girl.
Well, that's the worst part.
And that old dude was like, "Oh yeah, she's in the fucking barn. She's a zombie." It's like, don't you know how many of us almost fucking died looking for this dumb girl? Fuck that show. And the comic can suck.
Sorry, Phil, for that Game of Thrones. They stabbed one baby, and then. They were casually talking to somebody while skinning a deer. I was like, nah.
Oh, I'm all in that show. They got the hooks in me.
In this room, I stood up and said, fuck this show, and walked out, and Renee watched it for two more seasons.
Yeah. I'm two episodes into Game of Thrones. And here's what I'll say about that first episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
If a pilot is really supposed to set up a series, man, that first episode does it. You've got everything in that first episode. You've got, you know, it's opening with beheadings from weird creatures. You've got, then it's boobs, then there's intrigue, then there's incest, then there's more boobs.
And don't they show the thing with the baby in the snow?
I don't think that's in there yet. Then there's another beheading, and then they push a kid out a window, and then there's more boobs. I mean, that's the entire show.
Yeah, I don't want to live in that world.
It's a very cruel world to live in. I don't think anyone's going to make it out of the show.
To quote cliched internet memes at this point, one of those favorite things.
Ken has cheeseburger.
Well, yeah. So sort of not a whole lot unlike that. But
oh my god, boobs.
I was thinking more along the lines of the kids, fans of Tolkien think, I kind of want to live in Middle Earth. Fans of Harry Potter think, I want to go to Hogwarts.
Yeah, everyone wants to be a captain on the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah,
fans of Hunger
Games
wants
to go to TARDIS.
No, thanks, I'm good.
Yeah, and I think Game of Thrones is just like, fuck that.
Yeah, I'm still out. The way I feel about the new Doctor now is I love Capaldi. I think he's great. And I went back and bought some the first season of The Thick of It, because that was his big show before, which never really...
So when are you getting the next season?
It never came over here. Well, they were expensive. but I bought them on iTunes, which brings us back full circle!
Hey, everybody!
Look at that! But I really, really like him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to feel... Dave was here. Dave Redfield was here before the show. And we said, we're probably going to talk about the new Doctor. And he quit. He hasn't even seen Capaldi. And he quit. He said, I'm sick of Moffat. And I'm starting to understand why. Because I felt like when Matt Smith took over as the Doctor, there was this explosion of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting that. And granted, we have an older Doctor.
Right.
But most of that show is still business as usual. And I'm not angry at Moffat. I'm not one of those people that think he should be fired.
Right.
You know, he shouldn't write anymore. But I'm also starting to get that feeling from the third season of Sherlock. I thought it was a little,
okay.
It was a little flatter. And I'm thinking, it'd be great to have a new writer on.
Maybe
this
he
as
just
well.
Needs a vacation.
Oh, he's been running two shows at once,
and that's not easy. You know, I think you're right. This hasn't been a huge burst. There hasn't been a huge burst of energy in this season so far, but that's okay because I get the sense that they're really building and plotting, and they're doing a lot more with character. We're seeing more depth in Clara. We're seeing a little bit more what's happening with the Doctor as he's starting to more confront his past. I mean, Matt Smith was the Doctor for roughly 35% to 40% of the Doctor's entire life.
Right.
Obviously not screen time.
Because he was the Doctor for 3 years in real time, but
in Doctor time,
final episode is like 1,000 years long.
Yeah, and so that I think really changed the Doctor. The episode with Into the Dalek.
Just Steven's face.
I was like, he wasn't the Doctor that long, and then you're like, the last episode was 1,000 years. I'm like, fuck, what, fuck, what?
How do I watch that?
I don't have that kind of time.
That's Jesus. A lot of montage.
Yeah,
it has to be. It's like straight out of a workout scene from the 80s.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's like all Rocky movies at once.
And all of a sudden, after 10 minutes, he's the Rocky and Rocky Balboa. You're right. Like, what happened to your body? I think let's just end.
You're welcome.
Bill, how do we find you digitally?
You can find me on Cromley.net and on Twitter at Cromley. C-R-O-M-E-L-Y.
Allison? Since
no, you can't find me.
Don't come looking for me. That'd be weird.
The internet says otherwise.
Many, many pictures that Allison has taken somewhere on the internet, and you can't see them because they're part of her master's degree. You can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That's Caffeinated Comics feed. Follow us on Facebook. And Steven?
19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!